We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app. Listen to KMOX anytime, anywhere. Download the radio.com app today.
The heart of America is not government. The center of America is not Washington, D.C. The center of America is the neighborhoods where 330 million Americans are raising their kids and trying to put food on the table and trying to love their neighbor.
Now, Mark Reardon.
I just have one thing to say. Hang on here.
On St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, a beautiful day. Why is it that at the very beginning of the show, you think I would clear my throat before hitting the air, and I don't have a mic mute button here at home? Hopefully that's going to come to an end here in a few weeks when I start over at 97.1. If you missed the headlines on that a couple of days ago, yes, the show is moving on the 29th, and Mr. Dave Glover coming to KMOX. So it is another beautiful day. We're in the 60s. We have a lot to get through this afternoon. I want to offer some optimism. You know, I can't always be the most optimistic person, but I woke up this morning to the news of the St. Louis mayoral results, and I don't know about you, Dave, I don't know about you, but I felt pretty good about it, because here's why. Now, you might be concerned that two progressives that are probably closer to Cori Bush than anything else, I don't know about Kara Spencer, but certainly they want to close the workhouse, and Tashar Jones wants to defund the police. Tashar Jones is probably going to be the next mayor of the city of St. Louis, which to a lot of people I think is frightening, and it's shameful. If you're listening right now and you live in the city and you're outraged by this and you didn't vote, well, then it's your fault, because 22%, and that might be on the high side, 22% of eligible voters went to the polls yesterday to choose between these two candidates. And now you have this runoff election, but it shouldn't shock anyone that Tashar Jones got the most votes based on what happened with Cori Bush. Now, let me get to the optimism here, because I was thinking about this, and, you know, so the city goes, so does the region. You hear things like that, but I want to kind of paint this in a different picture. I think, and we talked about real estate yesterday, right? Mark Gelman was on. It was a couple of days ago. I think our home prices, probably, if we live in the suburbs like I do now, because I escaped the city of St. Louis, thank God, our home prices shot up 10%. If you're in St. Charles, maybe 20%. Yeah. So think of it this way. Don't worry about the city. The city's dead. There's no hope for the city of St. Louis. There really isn't. I wish I could be more positive. And, you know, it probably doesn't even matter who the mayor is, whether Louis Reed's going to be the mayor or Tashar Jones, because it's sad. It's hopeless. So you have 44,000 people who decided this mayor's race yesterday, and we're going to defund the police, and we're going to legalize prostitution. I am in favor of the strip clubs downtown, though, Tashar and Kara. Dave, if you remember, we played the sound bites from that several weeks ago. They were both in favor of strip clubs downtown, and I'm going to go all in on that. So we'll talk about that. Jeffrey Boyd's
here. You leave the ballpark, you go over to a strip club. I like it.
Now, you're probably going to be shot dead during that walk, but, you know, risk reward. You got to look at it that way, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's fair.
Well, if you can get to the strip joint, a lot of reward. You may have to risk your life, but, you know, it's sometimes things are worth it. You really have to think through things. So Jeffrey Boyd's coming up here in just a couple of minutes, St. Louis Alderman. And the reason I'm having Jeffrey on is because we had lunch a couple of months ago. We talked about how it is seemingly impossible to be a moderate Democrat in the city anymore. If you don't want to defund the police, you know, voters don't want to take a look at you. I'm fascinated by this. We are going to have Lewis Reed on the show a little bit later as well. I have not spoken with him yet. I was worried that this was going to be the outcome, and maybe he'll want to buy a house in the suburbs as well. Oh, you know, I think we're going to have Rita Days on this afternoon as well. She's the new St. Louis County Council chair after the whole legal wrangling went down. Andrew Cuomo went on, I guess, national television today, the governor of New York. A year ago, he was on national television every day. You know, CNN, Fox, they were airing his briefings, and everybody glommed onto his leadership. Even I said at the time, you know, I would watch those briefings. I thought, man, Andrew Cuomo's got it together. But now we know that he really didn't have it together, and there were people dying by the thousands in nursing homes. And we knew that was happening, but we didn't know how culpable Andrew Cuomo was, and it certainly looks like he was somewhat culpable. Now you have the, on top of the nursing home scandal, you have the Me Too moments that are building up time and time again. So Andrew Cuomo went on the, I guess, the defensive today. He finally had to say something. It's been several days. Here's what he said.
I now understand that I acted in a way that made people feel uncomfortable. It was unintentional, and I truly and deeply apologize for it. I feel awful about it, and frankly, I am embarrassed by it, and that's not easy to say, but that's the truth.
Now, he said that he's not going to resign, so he's not getting anywhere. Which was the one that we just played, Dave, because I'm having trouble determining which one we just played. What was the slug on that one?
That was, he was truly sorry for this.
Okay, well, I don't even see that one in there, so maybe... Gosh, I don't have that one. So let's go down to the one that says is not resigning.
I wasn't elected by politicians. I was elected by the people of the state of New York. I'm not going to resign. I work for the people of the state of New York. They elected me, and I'm going to serve the people of the state of New York. And by the way, we have a full plate. We have COVID. We have recovery. We have rebuilding. We have a teetering New York City. We have a terrible financial picture. We have to do vaccines. I'm going to do the job the people of the state elected me to do.
So he's not going to go anywhere. The Daily Show had a little fun with this last night because we know the love fest that's been on CNN between the Cuomo brothers. They put this together. We put a little music behind it to add our own touch.
You know, I've seen you referred to a little bit recently as the Love Gov.
Can't take it? Want a pat on the back?
Love Gov?
Even if it's the Love Gov from New York.
Do you think that you are an attractive person now because you're single and ready to mingle? Do you really think you are some desirable single person and that's not just people's pain coming out of them?
Love Gov?
I've always been a soft guy. I am the Love Gov. I'm a cool dude in a loose mood. You know that. I just say, let it go. Just go with the flow, baby, you know.
Oh, my God. Dave Klein, that was outstanding. All I said is put some music behind that. We got to put some music behind that. And the captain and Tennille could not have fit better. Outstanding. Producer Dave Klein, that's pretty good. I like that a lot. All right, man, there's so much I want to get to. There's this weird thing about Dolly Parton, but I don't know how much time I'm going to have here. Let me think here. If I'm going to have time or not. I got to do this Dolly Parton thing. Let's first do why Dolly Parton is in the news today, because she got the vaccine and she had a nice little greeting here when she got the vaccine and is trying to spread the word about it.
Preparing to get her COVID-19 shot, Dolly Parton rewrote the lyrics to Jolene and posted it online.
Vaccine, 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 vaccine. I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate.
So, yeah, that again, maybe the host should have done a little bit better preparation here with some of the audio, but I'm not doing great here on the audio today. So that was a little bit different than I expected, but she did get the vaccine and she sang the song. But here's what's weird about it. And this was on Hot Air this morning, and I just think it's so bizarre. So there's this, you know, Vox. Vox is a news site and I guess some sort of news publication, and they have these liberal stories out time and time again. And on Dolly Parton, they did, I don't know if you can describe this in any other way, but it's sort of a hit piece on someone that doesn't deserve a hit piece. In fact, the whole thing starts talking about, in the headline is, how Dolly Parton became a secular American saint. And who was it that wrote about this morning on Hot Air? It was John Sexton. Said, look, it's kind of framed as like a neutral explainer piece. And he describes it, he says, that's sort of Vox's core mission, putting a somewhat neutral, just explaining the news label on what is almost always partisan special pleading from the progressive left. So in this case, the story starts off relatively complimentary. Dolly is the living legend who sells out arena tours in her 70s. She's the songwriting genius who wrote Jolene and I Will Always Love You on the same day. In recent decades, feminists have begun to reclaim her as a feminist icon. She's an impeccably dressed glamour queen, a business titan whose brand includes her own theme park, a philanthropist whose literacy program has sent free books to millions of children. On top of all that, she helped fund Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine and then refused to jump the line to get a dose early. She's also so beloved that WNYC devoted a full podcast series to investigating how a single figure could be adored by both blue and red states. So they spent a little time explaining how Dolly went from a walking boob joke, because when I was younger, when I was even an adult, that was what it was, always Dolly's Partons, right? Can I say that? I guess I just did. And they talk about how she sort of evolved, and there was this meme that was created on Instagram last year with the caption, "Get you a woman who can do it all." And there's four pictures of Dolly, and she's in every different mode that you can imagine. So all this is good. So they talk about how, you know, Parton's tours are selling out again. She was selling stadiums in 2014. Really, her career is interesting. And she has this appeal to people, and it's described from a piece that was printed in 2014, and this quotes Roger Ebert. It says, in 2008, Roger Ebert returned to his 1980 Dolly Parton profile, noting that it had missed something he considered very important, her presence, which he writes, enveloped him. Sorry, I wanted to say enveloped him, but I had to think about that. That's how my brain is working. Enveloped him. This had nothing to do with sex appeal, he says. Far from it. It was as if I was being mesmerized by a benevolent power. I left the room in a cloud of good feeling. Ebert said when he spoke of his, or when he spoke with Gene Siskel about this, Siskel reported the same feeling. This will sound crazy, he said, but when I was interviewing Dolly Parton, I almost felt like she had healing powers. I say this with humility as someone who is not a believer. There's something very Christ-like about her. So then this whole piece turns weird and dark. The next paragraph is this. Now, you've just told everyone how great this woman is, and she's almost too good to be true. She does all these things that really seem to click, and, you know, she's still professionally successful. And then it says this. But America in the 21st century is no time for a secular pop saint. And there's a dark side to Dolly's ability to appeal Christ-like to all people at all times. There's no dark side at all. They go on, and she talks about, she doesn't want to talk about politics. So they criticize her because she refuses to talk about politics in public. Or that she allows racists to like her, or that she rewrote her labor rights anthem to help sell Squarespace. But it is the sort of thing that makes the reflexively trendy worship of Dolly, like a recent petition to replace all Confederate monuments in Tennessee with statues of Dolly, the Jesus of Appalachia, start to feel a little lazy, even cartoonish. So basically this piece is about tearing someone down who should not be torn down, but I guess this is what they do at Vox. I mean, if you read the whole thing, and unfortunately I did at John Sexton's recommendation, you're not going to come away thinking any less of Dolly Parton, but you're going to think Vox is a bunch of idiots. And why someone, I guess this is an editor somewhere, who would say, hey, let's do a hit piece on Dolly Parton, because you know what? She seems too good to be true. She's benevolent. She's friendly. She smiles a lot. She just did a campaign and told people to get the vaccine. Let's make her look bad, even though there's nothing for her to look bad about. Oh, you know, she, this is where we're at. Certainly with liberal media in this country. It's kind of disgusting when you think about it. 218, Alderman Jeffrey Boyd, to reflect on the mayoral results. Coming up next on KMOX.
Now, back to Mark Reardon on News Radio 1120, KMOX.
Well, City Treasurer Tashar Jones and Alderwoman Kara Spencer are the top two vote getters in last night's St. Louis mayoral race. They're going to meet in a runoff on April 6th in a few weeks. St. Louis Alderman Jeffrey Boyd is with me this afternoon to discuss. Alderman, how are you? Welcome back to the show.
Mark, I am outstanding. How you doing?
You're outstanding even after the results last night, because I'm happy because I think my home price out here in the burbs went up by at least 10% based on the results of this. And I wish I was joking, but I just don't see how two progressives and probably Tashar Jones running this city after the election April 6th is going to be a good thing for the city of St. Louis.
Well, let me say, so let's put things in perspective. I'm outstanding. I love who I am, what's going on with me. So I'm outstanding. Now let's talk about politics. So I was very disappointed.
Kid.
I was very disappointed in the outcome yesterday. Of course, it was no secret I was supporting Lewis Reed. I felt that Lewis Reed is better at bringing people together and being able to really move the city forward. But unfortunately, our city is moving, you know, more toward what the progressives, quote unquote, want to do, notwithstanding whether or not a person really has the temperament or the experience to really do the job. It's just there's a model, a person that they're looking for, a profile, and they found that in a couple of people. Now, I'll tell you, I have no problems with Kara Spencer. I like Kara Spencer. We work very well together as colleagues. Tashar Jones, I personally feel, does not have the temperament to be mayor. I mean, you have to be willing to take shots almost every day. And she is somebody, you know, dealing with her for the past 3 or 4 years, I've learned that doesn't take personal responsibility for anything that goes on. It's always somebody else's fault. And that's not good. Not good at all. And she's somebody, I mean, I'm an elected official. You have to deal with me. You block me from Twitter. How petty is that? We need somebody who's going to be mayor that's not going to get involved in petty politics, that's going to make the tough decisions, and that's going to work with people. You need to get 15 votes from the Board of Aldermen if you want to pass meaningful, impactful legislation that increases the quality of life of our constituents. If you're somebody that's a divider, in which she is, that's going to be difficult to do. Now, Kara, on the other hand, you know, I think she will manage the process a little bit better. But I would have hoped that Lewis Reed was going to the bonus round as well.
Well, and look, this is going to be, you're African-American. Lewis Reed is African-American. Kara Spencer is white. African-Americans are probably going to, in large numbers, vote more likely for Tashar Jones on April 6th, right?
And European-Americans are going to probably do the same thing. And so you got to find those people in the middle. Right. And I tell you one, I am African-American, but I have never in the history of me been voting, voted based on race. That's not acceptable to me. I vote based on me. You know, how does it impact me? I vote my interests. And I think that's what most people should be doing. I hope people don't get caught up in race. Oh, white people don't get caught up in voting white just because they're white, and black people get caught up in voting black because somebody's black. We need the right person at the right time in room 200.
So you and I had lunch a couple of months back, and we talked about some of these issues, and we were talking about the mayor's race. And one of the things, I think you said something along the lines, and I know Lewis is going to come on the next hour. I think he feels this way, that there's really no longer a place for an African-American moderate Democrat in the city of St. Louis. I mean, do you feel that way?
I do. You have to be all the way on this extreme or all the way on that extreme. And it's even more depressing when you look at African-American men. There's not much of a place for African-American men in politics. It's becoming more and more prevalent. And I'm not going to be a hater. I mean, I love African-American women. But I just think now it appears that the task is shifting in politics where it's more of the women's season. And that's okay. But let's have the right woman in office. That's important to me.
So I, you know, if I were living in the city of St. Louis, and I can hear this sort of bleeding through with one of the, you know, some of the discussions we're having right now, and this is where the focus is going to be in the next few weeks. I'm guessing that, and we'll ask Lewis this in the next hour, that there's going to be a lot of people interested in campaigning and getting behind Kara Spencer to perhaps prevent the more extreme candidate from winning this race. Am I sort of hearing you correctly?
I would want to get behind somebody that I think is going to be fair, that I think could work on compromising and bringing people together. You know, that's where I'm standing. You know, I'm not publicly saying I'm going to support Kara Spencer, but I definitely don't think that Shara will want my support. I mean, you block me on Twitter. I mean, you obviously don't care for me, you know, and so I doubt if that would happen, that she would want that. So that's not being considered by me. But at the end of the day, I can stay out of this and just sit back as a spectator, or I can get involved and sound the alarm.
I wouldn't feel too bad. Yeah, I wouldn't feel too bad about being blocked on Twitter by Tashara Jones, because I also enjoy that distinction. In fact, we may want to point out the people who have not been blocked instead of people who haven't
been
blocked.
Well, it's not that I care, but it speaks to a person's temperament and it speaks to a person's character. I mean,
I get beat up on Twitter,
and I haven't blocked anybody. Unless you go hard after my family or say something very egregious, I would probably, you know, want to block you. But I mean, people call me all kind of stuff, idiot, embarrassment, blah blah blah. But I tell you one thing, and this is for the record, if you go hard on me and call me names, I'm going to go back at you. So if you don't want to be called a name, don't call me a name, because respect goes both ways. Just because I'm a public servant don't mean you get to talk to me recklessly.
And we are on the same page on that, and I agree with you. And I blocked a few people who just – usually the people I block just annoy the living you-know-what out of me, and I just don't want to hear from them anymore. Alderman Jeffrey Boyd, thank you for coming on. We'll see where this takes us here in the next few weeks. I'm glad you're in such a chipper mood. I appreciate it. Thanks, Jeffrey.
Right on, man. Thank you. Take care.
You know, maybe we have – I think we do have to have a conversation in the next week. There is a part of me that emotionally thinks, this city, it can't be fixed. It really can't be fixed. And I don't know enough about Kara Spencer to know if she would make a good mayor. We've had her on the show. She came on when she entered the race. That was a little shaky interview. I think people going on with the media, they don't always do very well. Lyda Crewson's a pretty good example of that, certainly when she started. But there's a lot on the line. Is it going to be better if Kara Spencer's mayor – as opposed to Tashara Jones? I don't know if you can make that case. We'll see. Lewis Reed's going to join us at 3:30 on KMOX. We'll get to the news. We're coming back with my buddy John Ziegler talking about lockdowns and whether or not lockdowns have worked at all as we get into the spring with more relaxation. Texas is opening up. Back with John after the news. Sponsored by the Heisey Advisory Group.
News Radio 1120 KMOX. The voice of the Cardinals.
We do still have a couple of Reardon roundtables left before the switch to the FM. This Friday would be one of them. We have three left. I'm not good at math and not good at looking at the calendar. Yeah, I can't keep track. My brain has been scrambled ever since I found out about this last week. The 12th would be next week, and then the 19th will be the final. That's the final day on KMOX. I mentioned it because we have the panel set for this week. Former House Speaker Tim Jones, Alderman Jack Kotar, and Jane Duker all on the panel this week. Great piece. I tweeted this out yesterday. It's well timed because Texas is opening up. My friend John Ziegler, fellow radio host, he writes for Mediaite. The case that the media was wrong to accept lockdown effectiveness as the basis of all COVID coverage. John, you and I have talked about this before. I know as someone who lives out in California has been a victim of a lot of this more than certainly me. You're passionate about this. And it is well timed because of what happened in Texas. You see the reaction. Oh, my gosh. Greg Abbott's going to kill all these people because he's deciding that businesses should open up again, right? Panic has ensued.
Yeah, and it's predictable, and it's infuriating because, contrary to the media perception, a lot of conservatives are actually very science-oriented and data-based. And especially when you're dealing with an unprecedented set of circumstances, we've never tried this before, we're never recommended to try this before, any sort of a national lockdown over a virus, you would think, at the very least, if we were going to do this, that we would evolve our perception of reality as we got more evidence, right? And I am someone who was against the lockdowns from the beginning, but I was open-minded. I was actually hoping that we weren't going through this nightmare for nothing. And there was a narrative that made a little bit of sense that lockdowns were effective until the last couple of months. And that narrative was basically this, that at the beginning we were caught by surprise and that the greater New York area was the focus of the greatest catastrophic numbers and deaths just because of circumstances, and that the mitigation eliminated that in the summertime, and the summer wave was not as bad as the spring. And then the winter wave was seasonal and predicted, and that's why mitigation didn't work. But then that narrative completely, totally fell apart in the last 2 months when, against the predictions of all of the experts, including Dr. Fauci, who said the worst is yet to come on December 27th of 2000, the numbers dropped dramatically.
Continue to.
We've had, I believe it's now 50 consecutive days where the national hospitalization numbers have decreased. 50, despite Christmas, New Year's, the Super Bowl, the winter time, all of it against predictions. And now to me, Mark, as a logical, data, fact-based, evidence-driven person, there is no longer a logical narrative that the rise and fall of these numbers are based in mitigation. They're based in seasonality, luck, and other factors we probably don't even understand. And the experts are invested in this notion that they do understand it, and that somehow humanity has a control over all of nature, and that we can control a virus, and that everything that happens is because of we've either mandated masks, which, by the way, we didn't even recommend back in March of last year, or because of shutting down schools or restaurants, theaters, whatever it is. They are deeply invested in the idea that they were not wrong about that. And this is why Florida and now Texas are going to be the focus of so much wrath from the expert class, the elite class, and the media, which is what I wrote about and which I'm focused on in my Mediaite column, because they don't want to be seen as wrong. And you know, I've talked about this before. This is such an incredibly important human phenomenon in these circumstances. It's counterintuitive. When people make a mistake and the mistake causes enormous damage, you would think they would be more inclined to fix it and admit it. It's the opposite. When there is great damage, people don't want to admit they were wrong because then the damage is on their hands. The blood is on their hands. So they double, they triple, and they quadruple down on them not having been wrong originally. And that's what's happening on lockdowns. And let's be clear, the media has accepted this notion that lockdowns are effective and that these measures
work. Or they've amplified
it,
yeah.
And they've done so from the beginning.
Right.
With no evidence, no logic behind it, and they refuse to change now that the evidence is clear that in the end, we might be able to delay this thing, but in the end, what we do has very little impact. And what we have done is we have taken a really bad situation, a tragic situation, and we have amplified it exponentially in a way that we may never recover from. And no one who facilitated that mistake wants to admit it. And that causes problems in the future because now we're going to continue to stay locked down far longer need to.
If you listen through the language right now, they're already talking about more lockdowns next year, even if COVID is under control, because then, you know, maybe we're going to expand this to get rid of the flu. Did you see the LA Times this morning? So they have a piece, "I'm fully vaccinated. Can I hug a friend, eat indoors, see a movie? Here are the answers." So, can I have a dinner party? Yes, but, and then they talk about all these things. Share a hug? Yes. And then they get to this, John. You'll love this. Dine indoors at a restaurant. No. You can't do that because there are certain activities that even those who are fully vaccinated should avoid because the virus is so widespread. What sense does that make at all?
Well, there's two points I want to make on this. One, it's incredibly contradictory to their entire drive to get people vaccinated, right? I mean, if you're just trying to create incentives for people to be vaccinated, and I'm pro-vaccine, to be clear, the idea that somehow you're taking away all the incentives, and then, by the way, I love this, the media then wonders why not enough people are wanting to get vaccinated, which is frankly hilarious to me. That is inherently contradictory. But I would like to make an analogy to fires, right? We have a lot of fires here in Southern California, so I know a little bit. I'm not a fireman, but I follow this pretty carefully. And I find it interesting that the media fully accepts the notion that a fire can be 100% contained. That's what they call it, 100% containment, and still be blazing. It's when they say 100% contained, they stop covering it. It no longer matters. It's over. The fire's not out. It's contained.
Yeah.
That's what the vaccine does. The vaccine contains the virus. It can no longer get beyond the point where it is out of control, where hospitals might be overwhelmed, which was supposed to be the whole point of this thing, remember? 15 days
before
the curve.
Oh, I know. Well, we've gone well beyond that, though.
Right, right. So if you use the fire analogy, it proves the absurdity and the hypocrisy of the thinking. There are people who now believe, in serious people, being taken seriously by the news media, that we need to continue until we have, quote-unquote, zero COVID.
Oh, I know. I know there are people like that. Yes.
That is
all right, but here, let me put this on you, because I know people are thinking this, so, and I'm with you on 98% of this, but the one thing that I'm concerned about, and this is where I think the health experts get involved, is that, and I've had conversations, I've gotten some messages from people who have gotten this thing, who have recovered, but they're long haulers. They still have brain fog, they have aches, so there are consequences for people outside of, you know, getting put on a ventilator and dying as well.
That?
So that concerns me. No, I want you to. I know it's a fair question. I want you to address it.
All right. Okay. Look, I am not a doctor, but I'm a common sense person, right? So you tell me, Mark, whether or not it is plausible that when we create more hysteria, more fear, and more focus, and put everybody on a microscope in a situation where 29 million people have tested positive for a virus, that when we create this much tension, this much stress in everyday life, and especially once you get this, that under those circumstances, you're going to be able to find some weird stuff happening that might be misinterpreted as being because of a virus. Does that not make sense? When you have 29 million people and you put them under a microscope and enormous stress, weird stuff's going to happen.
Yes. No, I think weird stuff is happening. Yeah, I know. I get it. And here's the other thing. Look, we got a story in our local paper right now about a 22-year-old. And I got to be careful here because I don't want to say anything that's going to get me in trouble, and I do that all the time. But the story's about this 22-year-old who was given a 50-50 shot at surviving COVID and is now a long hauler. I will just tell you this, John, and I've noticed this. Again, I'm not a doctor like you, but this woman who I see a picture of, not exactly the picture of health going in. And I'm not saying that anyone deserves consequences from a virus, but one of the reasons that this is so dangerous to a fair amount of people in this country is because they're so unhealthy to begin with.
Ding, ding, ding. I actually believe that Donald Trump's biggest mistake in all of this, I believe that if Donald Trump had in April of last year said, we all need to lose weight and I'm going to be an example, and he lost 30 pounds or whatever it was and focused on that rather than on masks, he would still be president of the United States today. I believe that. I believe that that was the biggest mistake. The idea that we closed gyms and everyone sit inside watching Netflix in a situation where obesity is the number one risk factor is one of the more mind-blowing elements of this entire insanity.
And there's a lot of them. John Ziegler, I love it when you get fired up, Zig. I appreciate it. You going to join me on the FM when I move over here in a few weeks?
Of course. Can't wait.
It's going to be exciting. 247 on KMOX.
Traffic and weather together every 10 minutes, mornings and afternoons, on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
So my daughter turns 6 years old on Monday, and Dave, my wife was checking with her teacher at Staten Elementary just to see, you know, because they can bring certain things for celebration and stuff like that. You can't have food allergy stuff, things like that. So that's the rule that they have. But her teacher, Alexa's teacher, wrote back. You're going to love this. Oh, and if she's been coming home with random crayon or marker boxes, it's because she begs me to let her take them home because she says, quote, my dad loves to burn stuff. So
wow.
I hope that's been translated as we have a fire pit and my dad likes to burn stuff instead of, hey, my dad's a firebug or my dad's a pyro and he likes to burn stuff.
You might be getting called to the office yourself here soon, Mark.
Oh my goodness. And
wow.
Mrs. Wolf has been great, by the way, and she's decided here's how bad Alexa Reardon's been for. She has decided to you know, temporarily, maybe for, you know, permanently retire from teaching because she has a child of her own. But I think it's my daughter that drove her out. We're just going to go with that. All right, we got to get to Tim Allen here because I love this. First of all, I love what he says at the beginning. He's on the Mark Maron podcast, and he gets to something here at the end about Donald Trump. But I love what he says just overall about finances and fiscal conservatism. Here he is, Tim Allen.
Once I started making money, I had the silent partner that just took almost half of my money and never gave me anything for it. And that was the taxes. I've never liked taxes. Whoever takes the taxes and never tells me what they do with it, I'm a fiscal conservative person with money. That's it. I don't like you taking. I worked pretty hard for this stuff, and I accomplished a lot, and I was handicapped by my own errors. Right. It's all my fault. Yeah. I get that.
Yeah.
But I had this silent partner, never liked taxes, never liked what they do with taxes, and the both sides.
Well, he's right about that. You know, both sides is right. But the confiscatory nature of government is what ticks him off, and it ticks me off too. Now, those of you, and I know there are people out there that don't make a lot of money annually and you don't pay a lot of income taxes, but think about the possibility when you do actually make money, or when you, you know, let's say you're a younger person, you're not making a lot of money, you start to earn, maybe you get some bonuses in a sales job or something like that, and then they lop off 50% from that for, you know, supplemental income. It's just outrageous. You're punished for doing well in this country. That's basically the system that we have. But this is good too at the end here.
It's not their money.
The silent partner being the government?
The government. I never really liked that. I don't like that.
Are you concerned, or has Disney ever said anything to you? Are you too big an earner for them to give a shit?
No, because I said the powers that be, I literally don't preach anything.
Right.
I said what I've done is I've just not joined into, as I call it, the we culture. I'm not telling anybody else how to live. I don't like that. It was like, we should do this or we should do that. And once I realized that the last president pissed people off, I kind of liked that. So it was fun to just not say anything. Didn't join in the lynching crowd.
The we culture is a great way to put that, because I've said this before, maybe in terms of Paul McCartney and Paul McCartney, they come to Busch Stadium 30 years ago and there's no hot dogs there because Linda McCartney is an animal rights nut, right? I don't care if you want to don't eat hot dogs. I don't care if you think the planet's going to go away in 5 years like Greta Thunberg. Remember, it's only 5 now. It was 7. It's only 5. That's fine. But keep us out of it, okay? Keep your wee stuff to yourself, because we're sick and tired of being told how to live by the people that want to talk about we. I like Tim Allen. Love him, actually. Did a great interview with him maybe 10 years ago. He's a big radio guy, too. Grew up in Detroit. He loves heritage radio stations like KMOX. There you go. Great. That could be a cut of the day. Maybe we'll still use it here this afternoon. Second hour of the show coming up. Chris Negus from News 4. Great story on COVID he'll have tonight. We'll give you the details. Coming up.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.